Bush has been ordered to say they're not homicide bombers. All bombings are intended to kill people, to produce homicides. Anyone who packs a bomb with nails and bits of steel and sets it off in a public place is hoping to commit homicide. This is true of any bomb. Whether you drop it out of an airplane or leave it on a doorstep, you're hoping to kill people. That's the purpose, killing people. In the case of these so-called suicide bombs, what's different is that the people setting them off are intentionally ending their own lives in the process. That's why we confuse the act with suicide. Human shields. During bombing raids in Iraq, the media liked to say that Saddam Hussein used people as human shields. That's not accurate. Although it's true they were used as shields, the fact is they were humans already. So if these humans were used as shields, they were human shields. They weren't being used as human shields. Got that? Bush calls the Al-Qaeda people cowards and says they like to hide. Well, isn't that what the American Continental Army did during the American Revolution? Our beloved patriots? They hid. They hid behind trees. They came out, killed some British soldiers, and ran away. Just like Al-Qaeda. That's what you do when you're outnumbered and have less firepower than the enemy. It's called trying to win. It's not cowardly. Bill Maher may have stretched the point a bit when he said that Air Force pilots who release their bombs from hundreds of miles away are cowards. Seems to me flying combat jets doesn't attract many cowards, but it's not nearly as courageous an act as deliberately strapping a bomb to your chest and heading for the disco with no intention of dancing. I will say this. Getting out of the Vietnam War through Daddy's connections and then not living up to your end of the bargain is probably a form of cowardice. Here's another misnomer. Heroes who died for their country. The Port Authority of New York and New Jersey said that changing the name of Newark Airport to Liberty International Airport would be a way of honoring the more than 3,000 heroes who died for their country in the World Trade Center. Pardon me for pointing this out, folks, but stock traders, clerks, receptionists, cooks, waiters, and building maintenance people in the World Trade Center didn't die for their country. They died because they went to work. Not one of them would have shown up for work that day if you had told them they would die as a result. Try to get your heroes straight. Not everyone who died in 9/11 was a hero. Hero is a very special word. That's why we reserve it for certain special people. Not every fireman and policeman who was on duty that day was a hero. The ones who risked or lost their lives trying to rescue people were heroes. They acted heroically. The others probably did a good job and were very helpful. But heroes? If everyone's a hero, then the word doesn't mean much anymore. And sooner or later we'll have to give the real heroes, the heroic ones, a new name to distinguish them from the rest of the pack. Too bad superheroes is already taken. Would have been perfect. But relax, folks. If I know us, mega hero can't be too far over the horizon. Although, to be honest, I kind of like the alliteration in hyperhero. Let's shoot for that. These anti-war demonstrators are really unimpressive people. They're against war? How groundbreaking. What a courageous stand. Listen, angry asshole, pick something difficult, like religion. Why don't you get out in the street and start marching around against religion, something that's really harmful to mankind? War is simply nature's way of doing things, of keeping down the count. Religion is the problem. Get rid of religion, and you've done the planet a favor. So how about getting out there next weekend and marching around with a sign that says, "Ho, ho, ho, religion must go." Come on, protesters, show some balls. I can't understand what it is people like about John Wayne movies. I think they suck. I find him inauthentic. Sometimes when I'm clicking around the channels, looking for the least objectionable program, I come across a movie scene in progress. It's in black and white, it's clearly a Western, and it looks old enough that it could actually be fun to watch. I see guys like John Ireland, Barton MacLean, Ward Bond, Anthony Quinn, Charles Bronson, Dan Duryea, Thomas Mitchell, Lee Van Cleef, and Brian Donlevy shooting each other, drinking, and playing cards, and I get this great nostalgic feeling. Then John Wayne rides up, and I have to reach for the remote. It's a fucking shame. He spoils war movies in the same way. By the way, I feel the same about Jimmy Stewart. These people should not have been allowed to spoil so many perfectly good movies. Good afternoon, folks. This is Pedro Fleming. Welcome to Don't Ask the Doctor, America's only medical advice program based on questions that are not pertinent to the field of medicine. Here is our medical expert, Dr. Ned Gittles. How are you today, Doctor?
Not bad, Pedro, considering all the sick people I see. How about you?
Well, I have a malignant tumor inside my nose.
Don't ignore that. Take some pills. Do you have any pills at home?
Sure, lots of different kinds.
Good, take some of them. That's my advice.
And good advice it is. Well, let's get started. Here's a question from Elaine Trickler in Frogballs, Tennessee. She writes, Doctor, my car seems to hesitate a little when I accelerate from a red light, and I'm afraid it will stall. What should I do?
Don't ask me.
That's right. Don't ask the doctor. How would he know? That's obviously a question for a mechanic.
Righty-ho.
For having her question used on Don't Ask the Doctor, Elaine Trickler will receive a free rectal thermometer by RectoSwell, the last word in rectal thermometers. See the new RectoSwell line of monogrammed thermometers at leading rectal equipment dealers in your area. Try Orifice Max or Brown's Personal Items for inside the rectum.
RectoSwell is a good one, Pedro. Sometimes I use mine when I'm cooking a turkey.
Great idea, Doctor. Well, folks, that's it for today. Tune in again tomorrow when Dr. Ned Gittles will answer the question, How can I increase my soybean yield? On America's favorite medical advice program, Don't Ask the Doctor. Stay tuned for Video Magazine as beauty expert Mavis Davis shows a young albino girl how to keep her hair from turning prematurely brown. You're tuned to Elaine and Joe's Radio Network. I object to the use of usage when it's used in place of use. There's nothing wrong with using use. It's been in use a long time, and I'm used to it. It isn't that usage isn't useful. I simply have no use for its current usage. The use of usage should be consistent with good usage. I'd prefer to say, my use of the Internet, rather than my usage. If I meant it collectively, I might say, American usage of the Internet. But so far, I haven't meant that. And as I'm using space on usage, I'll use some more on utilize. Using utilize instead of utilizing use is one of those attempts to make things sound more important than they really are. Sports announcers do that all the time. They misapply big words. He's not utilizing all his skills. They don't understand that an athlete doesn't utilize his skills. He uses them. The coach utilizes his players, but the players use their skills. Don't use utilize when you should be utilizing use. Another sports announcer crime is the use of the word differential when they mean difference. There was a 12-point differential at halftime. No, sorry, there was a 12-point difference at halftime. Differential is a mechanical or mathematical term. And by mathematical, I don't mean Knicks 55, Pacers 43. Difference and differential are different. Go Knicks! It also annoys me that people sometimes claim to see a linkage when they actually see a link. I think link is fine. Linkage reminds me of my car's transmission. In fact, I think my car's linkage is located somewhere near the differential. Stoppage is another ungainly word. The most frequently heard euphemism for a labor strike is work stoppage. Apparently, labor strike sounded too Marxist for loyal Americans, but stoppage sounds like an obstructed bowel, and stoppage is much too close to sewage for my comfort. Usage, linkage, and stoppage remind me of outage. This is a word I simply dislike. It's an awkward, ugly word. Outage. It sounds like something that's done when a gay person's identity is revealed. But actually, its most frequent use is in describing a loss of electricity, power outage. We used to say power failure, but I guess Americans don't like to admit failure. even when it's manifest. Regardless, we ought to find a better way to answer the question, what happened to the lights? By the way, I recently heard the following sentence on CNN. Because of high winds, about 250,000 people in New England are without power. And I thought, gee, when you think about it, about 275 million people in the United States are without power. They just aren't aware of it. When reporting a bombing by some radical group, the news media will often inform us that no one has claimed responsibility. Why is this wording used instead of no one has taken credit? To save the feelings of the dead people's relatives? The people who did the bombing surely see it as a credit. Let them have their moment in the sun. Look at all the trouble they went to. Here's another gratuitous editorial appendage often heard on the TV news coverage of a fire or an accident. Luckily, no one was hurt. Or the good news is no one was injured. I consider those to be editorial comments. After all, I may not think it's such good news that no one was hurt. I'm entitled to decide for myself whether or not injuries to strangers are good or bad news. I may prefer hearing, it's a shame no one was hurt. It's entirely possible. Please save the commentary for the editorial page. And I could also do without these grim, mock-serious facial expressions and sad voices the television news people affect when reporting one of these so-called tragedies. Diane Sawyer is one of the worst offenders. She lowers her voice dramatically and puts on this really sad face and tells you all about the baby who died in a washing machine. If you weren't listening carefully, you'd think the goddamn tragedy happened to her. Is that good? I don't think so. Just let me have the news, please. I'll get Meryl Streep to handle the sad faces. Another empty sentiment concerning the death of people, you hear it on the news and you hear it in real life. Our thoughts are with the family. What exactly does that mean? Sympathies I can understand. Prayers, as ineffective as they are, I can understand. But thoughts? Why thoughts? What kind of thoughts? Just thoughts? Like, gee, he's dead. How does that help? When first reporting on Michael J. Fox's Parkinson's disease, one news lady announced that everyone's thoughts are with Michael. Well, I'm by no means happy that he's sick, and he happens to be one of the few celebrities I genuinely like. But to be perfectly honest with you, for most of the day, my thoughts were definitely not with Michael. I wish him well, and I admire the way he copes, but at any given moment, my thoughts are probably on pussy. The satellite service I get has this great channel, Explicit TV. It's not nearly as limited in content as the standard channels you see. Here are a few excerpts from their program guide. Daytime drama. Harper Darrow and Mary Jane Crotch Jockey star in the continuing story of hardship, sorrow, fear, pain, disillusionment, guilt, and suicide in a blue-collar family living in a run-down neighborhood. Don't miss the acclaimed daytime drama Fuck This Shit. In tomorrow's episode, Velma is given a cesarean section by Nick and Artie, two neighbors who are handy with tools, only to discover she wasn't really pregnant. Partial nudity, heavy drinking, spousal abuse, despair, home improvement tips. A public service program. Every evening at 7:30, citizens and consumers get a chance to sound off and air their complaints. Don't miss Blow It Out Your Ass with Consumer Ombudsman Susan Dorkalot. If you have a complaint to register, be sure you call in, talk to Susan, explain your grievances and complaints, and then listen carefully as she bellows, Blow it out your ass! Con games, larceny, gullibility, anger, hostility. Financial news. Every evening at 6 o'clock, catch the Wall Street buzz on Money Talks, Shit Walks. Tonight, Ron Insana interviews Windfall Profits III, one more worthless cocksucker who makes his living on Wall Street. Don't be left behind in the fast-changing world of business and finance. Keep up to date by watching Money Talks, Shit Walks, brought to you by Pennington Cramore, Wall Street scumbag since 1869. Greed, envy, arrogance, predatory males. Old-time comedy favorites. Comedy rules the house on Wednesday night with four of your all-time favorites in a row. First, on Mork and Mindy, Mork is caught performing cunnilingus on a gumball machine. The fun begins and the gumballs fly when Mindy tries to work Mork's tongue loose, gets sexually aroused, and has her first quintuple orgasm. Gum-chewing, moaning, Lord's name taken in vain. Then, on All in the Family, Archie Bunker kills a nigger, blames it on a spick and two chinks, and hires a Yid lawyer to bribe the judge. Don't miss the laughs, as two guineas beat the shit out of Archie just for the fun of it. Meanwhile, police arrest Michael for pimping out Gloria to Louise Jefferson for a mixed-race dyke gangbang in the back of George's dry cleaners. Racism, bigotry, vaginal bruising. After that, on I Love Lucy, Ricky pays Ethel $20 for a quick hand job in the broom closet. But things really get hilarious when Fred is caught placing a kosher knockwurst in Lucy's asshole. Things get worse when Ricky's nightclub show is canceled as 12 members of the band come down with anal warts and have to play standing up. Nudity, sex, sphincter jokes, bogus Latin music. Our quartet of madcap sitcoms continues with Leave It to Beaver, as Beaver and Wally fall out of a maple tree while masturbating each other. Imagine everyone's surprise when they land smack on top of a flustered June Cleaver who is giving Eddie Haskell a blowjob under the tree. Pee-pee jokes. Frontier Nostalgia. Next week, back-to-back on Nostalgia Theater, you'll see two of America's favorite episodes of Little House on the Prairie. First, the 1975 Christmas show, A Douchebag for Clara. Little Clara comes of age and asks Santa for her own douchebag. At first it looks like a disaster when, out of inexperience, she sticks it in the wrong hole. But Luke, the disturbed neighbor boy, saves the day when he distracts everyone by removing his dog's vital organs with a stick. Clara later learns to douche properly after several long sessions with old Doc Flathammer. Then you'll see just about everyone's favorite Little House on the Prairie, the hilarious Missy Takes a Dump in the Woods, as our young heroine answers nature's call while wearing high heels and a long dress. Watch her as she tries to maneuver through bramble bushes and poison sumac. Then, too late, she finds out there's no toilet paper and has to wipe herself with several pine cones. The fun and the screaming begins when she unknowingly pulls the cones in the wrong direction. Partial nudity, douche lessons, unpleasant language. Dueling talk shows. Since last month Oprah had a special show, Women Who Fake Orgasms, this month, not to be outdone, Jerry Springer is presenting a nighttime special, Men Who Fake Bowel Movements. Graphic video, foul odors. In a special program, Dr. Phil welcomes famed psychic medium John Edwards to the show, and they try to contact dead whores. Then, in a special pre-taped segment, Dr. Phil cures a woman's fear of flying by throwing her out of an airplane. Limited intellects. Even more talk. Two fascinating glimpses into the medical world as Montel Williams investigates doctors who intentionally give patients the SIF, and Maury Povich interviews twins who eat each other's feces. Indigestion. Award-winning documentary maker Ken Burns continues his penetrating look at America's history as he takes on a three-part study, The Great Cabbage Fart Panic of 1860. The disaster, which lasted an entire summer, took the lives of 3,500 people, mostly from lung diseases. The special sound effects heard required the services of over 300 Milwaukee men who were fed only beer and cabbage for 7 weeks. 14 stuntmen died during the recreations. Then, Friday at midnight, don't miss Willie Nelson's pay-per-view concert, Wankin' with Willie. Willie kicks off the festivities in great fashion as he gets right into one of his all-time bestsellers, Too Drunk to Jerk Off. Then he introduces his guest star, Loretta Lynn, who sings her big hit, Your Love Ran Down My Leg and Now You're Gone. Willie then joins her on stage, and they warble a pair of romantic love songs, Kiss Me, I'm Coming, and You Blew My Mind, Now Blow Me. The pair's tandem segment concludes as Willie serenades Loretta with his special new arrangement of We Kissed and My Balls Exploded. Willie then takes the solo spotlight again with his familiar country lament, I Should Have Fucked Old What's-Her-Name. And what would a Willie Nelson show be without a good old cowboy song? This time he honors the late Roy Rogers and does an authentic Western ballad written by Roy called It's Midnight in Montana and I Can't Get My Dick Out of This Cow. Home movie footage of the original incident, taken by Roy's beloved wife Dale Evans, adds to the song's authenticity. His faithful horse Trigger is seen off to the side, brandishing a huge hard-on. The whole shebang then ends with more vintage video, this time from Willie's first special. Two of Willie's great buddies, Johnny Cash and Waylon Jennings, both now gone to that big corral in the sky, are seen with Willie as they all deliver a rousing version of that definitive honky-tonk anthem, drinking beer, taking a shit, and passing out. As the closing credits roll and his band plays God Bless America, Willie is seen smoking a big joint rolled in American flag paper. Hi, honey, how was Debbie's checkup?
The dentist was really pleased. Only 6 extractions this time.
Great. Plus, she needs a jawbone graft and 12 implants. Must be that new gel toothpaste we've been using.
Yes, patented new Chopper Sheen. Removes unwanted pulp, enamel, and bone.
Chopper Sheen, now in refreshing mint. Here's a piece of graffiti I saw scrawled in black marking pen on one of those newspaper dispensers you see on New York sidewalks. It said, Rosie O'Donnell sleeps with her head between a woman's legs. I couldn't help wondering who had written it. And under what circumstances? I wondered, had someone simply awakened that morning and decided the time had come to share this little tidbit he'd been thinking about for a long time? And had he gone out that day determined to find a good place to write it? And this seemed like the best spot? Was it that simple? Or was the person just out walking around and had this sudden burst of inspiration? Something he didn't want to forget. But he didn't have a piece of paper handy. And why didn't he take the newspaper dispenser home with him to refer to it later? And I also wondered, if that was it, what kind of person was walking around with one of those thick felt-tip marking pens in his pocket in the first place? This wasn't no Sharpie, folks. This was one of those serious, thick, chisel-tip pens that get you high if you leave it open too long. It's thoughts of this sort that seriously limit the size of my circle of friends. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is your announcer, Dondaleo Prell. Join us now as we play America's favorite game, Answer This, You Prick! The show where folks just like you, although perhaps less attractive, have a chance to win fabulous prizes. And now, here's America's favorite prick, Anthony Boff.
Hi, folks. I'm your genial host, Anthony Boff. Our jackpot today is $111 plus a trip up north. Let's meet our first two contestants, Clark Fark and Dolly Drellman. What do you do, Clark?
I pretty much just sit around, Anthony.
Swell. What about you, Dolly?
No sitting around for me, Mr. Boff. I stand near the window.
All day?
Except for meals, unless I'm fasting.
Well, you sound like interesting people. Let's get right to our game. Just before airtime, a short backstage shoving match determined that Clark would get the first question. So here it is. Are you ready, Clark?
Ready as a bastard, Mr. Boff.
Okay. Remember, the category is people. Now then, Clark Fark, as America watches, please answer this, you prick. Damon and Sylvia Prongster live in Thymaster, Maine, on the corner of Watkins and Skirmerhorn. Last Tuesday, at 6 in the evening, a brown Chevrolet drove past their house. What was the name of the last mechanic to change the oil on that car, and what was the name of his grandfather's first-grade teacher? You have 3 seconds.
Jason Warburton and Mrs. Amelia Day Higgins.
Oh, I'm awfully sorry, Clark. Your answer is incorrect. The correct answer is Dudley Manouche and Clara Wheatley.
Well, I just took a wild guess.
I knew that answer.
Not fucking likely, Dolly.
I agree, Mr. Boff. I think she's full of shit.
Clark, I'm awfully sorry you did such a poor job. I see your family in our audience, and they look ashamed. But you do win a roll of quarters and the home version of teacher-approved Answer This, You Prick!
played with your kids. And we'll add a dollar to our jackpot, bringing the total to $112. It's too late for us to get to Dolly Drellman, but that's just too bad for her. Don't forget to join us again in June or May to play Answer This, You Prick, when one of our main questions will be, who was the first person to strangle someone he had known for more than 6 years? Good night, everybody! Guests on Answer This, You Prick receive a framed picture of Henry Kissinger and stay at the luxurious Hotel for the Malformed in downtown Watsonville. Watsonville, the last place you want to be.
Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. Yesterday I killed my third priest in a month. The first time it scared me. The second time I had no feelings at all. The third time I actually began to like it.
I'm not really a priest, son. I'm just cleaning the confessional.
This is called Thanksgiving in the Kitchen.
You look great in that dress, Marion. Really sexy. I was thinking if God forbid, something ever happened to Joe and Estelle, I'd sure like to spend some time with you.
I feel the same way about you, Bart.
Really? Look, maybe we wouldn't have to wait for something to happen to Joe and Estelle. What do you think?
This one is called Walk, Don't Walk.
I heard Phil Hanley died. What happened?
It's the strangest thing. He was walking down Fifth Avenue on his way to Times Square. He took a right at 42nd Street and headed over to Broadway. He was just strolling along, minding his own business, when suddenly a big chunk of concrete fell on him and crushed him to death.
Jesus, what a way to go.
I know. I would have taken a right at 50th Street, gone over to Broadway, and then headed down to Times Square.
Uncle Lochinvar, although a moral vegetarian who only ate meat if the animal had died in its sleep, once punched out his twin daughters because they wouldn't lend him 15 cents. He could speak 7 languages, but unfortunately he was disliked in all those countries. His hobby was visiting cemeteries in poor areas and guessing which people had had the worst lives. He fell in love with a fish dentist named Chiquita, and a week later she died from using infected toilet paper while watching a TV show called Progress in Medicine. Inconsolable, Lochinvar, after composing his own epitaph, Believe Me, I Wasn't a Schmuck, died as part of a group enema suicide pact. Uncle Sherlock was a proctologist's mate in the Navy who fought in Korea and the Philippines. Unfortunately, it was just last year, and he was jailed in both countries. He was the only man ever brought before the world court for unpaid parking tickets. His personal checks did not depict nature scenes. They showed animal euthanasia and the Allied firebombing of Dresden. During a bungee jump, he fell in love with a Dutch courtroom artist, and they were married in a windmill the next day during a relative calm. They drifted apart when he realized that all she wanted to do was sit for hours and listen to skiing on the radio. Later, he moved to Milan and was killed when a riot broke out at the La Scala candy counter during the second act of Rigoletto. Uncle Dagwood was a fun guy. He once claimed the most difficult thing he ever did was to take a shit in a phone booth without removing his overcoat. He met his wife, Spatula, at a UFO convention where she was conducting a basketball clinic for abductees. The instant they met, Dagwood knew she was his kind of woman. She had peach preserves in her hair and brown gravy caked on her neck. Spatula worked for years as an unregistered nurse and eventually ran off with an ironmonger. She and her new lover, Rolf, died in a blimp fire over Newfoundland, and Dagwood was killed in a barca lounger having rough sex with a Norwegian fisherman. Uncle Lucifer was my most interesting uncle. He was an elk hunter, but he wouldn't kill the elk. Instead, he would chase it down, knock it to the ground, and suck all the gristle out of its neck through a Donald Duck straw. He was fun to be with. He could eat a whole bowl of alphabet soup and then vomit up the vowels and consonants separately. His hobby was attending reunions of groups he never belonged to and pretending to be people who were long dead. Till the end of his days, Lucifer remained bitter that when he was a boy, there had been no seedless red grapes. He died in an Indiana furniture outlet when he was torn to pieces by a pack of cape-hunting dogs.
Child care tip. Never use a hammer to smooth out the lumps on a newborn baby's head. Instead, wrap a soft, clean cloth around a 10-inch length of wood and pound each lump repeatedly until the larger ones are gone and the area is smooth. Follow up by rubbing vigorously with a wire brush. Remember, never use a hammer on a child of any age, especially an infant.
A news report. The death of Humpty Dumpty. From the nursery newsroom, this is Keith Blanchgetter. A mystery on the West Side today with the apparent death of the beloved Humpty Dumpty. We begin our Action Central News team coverage tonight with Joni Wong at the scene of the tragedy. Thank you, Dan. Well, it's true. Humpty Dumpty is dead. The cause of death was apparently a great fall from this wall behind me. Joni, what's the scene like out there right now? Well, as you can see, police have taped off the area and are treating it as a crime scene, and no one seems to know why. According to one eyewitness, all the king's horses and all the king's men tried to put Humpty Dumpty back together again, but were unable to do so. We have with us now one of those king's men. What is your name, sir?
Dooley. Kevin Dooley.
And you're one of the king's men?
That's right. I've been one of the king's men for 17 years.
And you were the first on the scene?
That is correct. My partner and I responded to a 1043. That's an egg on a wall.
Egg on a wall?
Right. It's a routine call. We get them all the time. Usually by the time we arrive, the egg is gone. Or else we arrive and the egg is intoxicated and we have to remove him.
And what was different this time?
Well, this time we got a dead egg on our hands. He either fell or jumped. There's a chance he was pushed. We can't rule it out.
Is that why you're treating it as a crime scene?
That is correct. Crime scene people are checking the area now for trace evidence, hair and fibers, stuff like that.
We've been told that all the king's horses and all the king's men tried to put Humpty Dumpty back together again.
That's not completely true. Some of the king's horses and a few of the king's men, but not all. The king has a lot of horses and men. They're needed for parades.
So they weren't able to put him back together again?
No. He never had a chance. His yoke was broken. Once the yoke is gone on these eggs, it's all over.
Do the police have any theories?
We're developing leads at this time, questioning some other eggs who were seen with him earlier today. Apparently there was some drinking going on at a picnic. All in all, we're told there were about a dozen eggs out there, and I guess it got pretty rowdy. They were singing dirty songs and harassing females.
Can the public help?
We're asking people who may have information to call our tip hotline, 800-429-EGGS. All calls will be held in strict confidence.
Thank you for talking with us, Officer Dooley. Well, that's it from the scene, Keith. Humpty Dumpty dead at the bottom of a wall. Now let's send it over to Marcia Lopez at the Dumpty family residence. Marcia? Thank you, Joni. I'm standing here with Humpty's best friend, Vinny Amoletta. Vinny, what kind of an egg was he?
Easygoing, nice guy. One time when some kids were teasing him about being fat, he bought them all an ice cream.
But what do you think happened?
I don't know. I saw him just yesterday. He was fine. I told him to stay off that wall. It's not safe. Some of those bricks are loose. But he was headstrong. He never listened.
Thank you, Vinny. We're going to talk now with Humpty's widow, Arlene Dumpty. Mrs. Dumpty, thanks for taking a moment with us. This must be a very difficult time for you.
Yes, I'm still in shock. My thoughts are all scrambled.
How did you feel when you found out he was dead?
It was no fun, I can tell you that. He was a good egg.
What do you suppose he was doing on the wall?
He went up there all the time. He would just sit there and think. He was very deep for an egg.
What are your plans for services? Will there be services?
Well, he was very conservative, so we'll probably stick with a traditional egg funeral.
And what is that?
You know, skillet, a little butter, salt and pepper, maybe some peppers and onions.
Will you have an open casket?
I'm not sure. A lot of them is already soaked into the ground. But we'll crazy glue the shell together as best we can and go from there.
How can people express their condolences?
We're asking people just to send bacon, or ham if they like, and maybe some home fries, but not too greasy. Or they can just make a contribution to the Humpty Dumpty Foundation for Research on Safer Egg Salad.
Thank you so much, Mrs. Dumpty.
No sweat. My pleasure, honey. I'm sure he's smiling down on us from wherever it is eggs go. Although, he was an agnostic. He would have liked that.
Well, that's it. Humpty Dumpty is dead, and no one knows why. A story we'll undoubtedly hear more about. From the scene, this is Marcia Lopez. Now back to our studio. Here's a good way to provide some entertainment for your 4-year-old when you tuck him in at night, and at the same time, stimulate his imagination. I came up to say goodnight and tuck you in, Timmy. You had a big day, so make sure you get a good night's sleep. And don't forget to watch out for the boogeyman. Remember what Daddy told you about the boogeyman, how he kills little boys? What do you think, Timmy? Is the boogeyman here in your room, hiding somewhere?
Is he in the closet?
Is he going to jump out and kill you when I leave the room? He might. You never know. Maybe he's under the bed. He likes to hide there, too. He might claw his way through the mattress and kill you. Don't let him kill you, Timmy. You know what he does? He sticks a sharp metal tube up your nose and sucks the fluid out of your brain. It really hurts a lot. I'm going to turn out the lights now and leave you alone in the dark, all by yourself. And I don't want to hear a peep out of you. If I hear any noise coming out of this room, I'm going to come up here and beat you. Try to get a good night's sleep. By the way, Mommy saw a monster walking up and down the hall last night. The monster had a piece of paper in his hand with your name on it. Night-night. Here's a surefire way to stimulate the economy and increase productivity at the same time. From now on, when someone asks what time it is, it costs a dollar. That would stimulate the economy. Then, if they don't want to pay, they have to go find out for themselves. That would increase productivity. Some of my ideas may not be perfect, but they're always worth considering. The best thing about visiting a hospital is that you see a lot of people who are much sicker than you, and it kind of makes you feel good. True fact. I read that there's a rich couple in the Hamptons on Long Island who have palm trees on their property, and in the winter they fly the trees to Florida to get them out of the cold weather. I can't help wondering how they treat their servants. You know how sometimes you have a song going through your head over and over all day long, maybe even 2 or 3 days, and it's driving you crazy because you can't get it out of your mind? Well, I know how to fix that. It's extreme, but it works every time. You kill yourself. You know, they're always talking about what separates the men from the boys. Well, I'm going to tell you what separates the men from the boys. The sodomy laws. Regarding a wild goose chase, why are these wild geese supposed to be so hard to find? They're right up there in the sky. I see them flying over in big flocks all the time in the spring and the fall. They don't seem to be hiding. So why do we make such a big deal out of this? Live every day as if it's your last, and eventually it will be. You'll be fully prepared. I hope I meet Bob Dole someday. I plan to grab his bad right arm and shake it like crazy. By the way, I'm glad he didn't get to be president. I prefer a guy who can push the nuclear button with either hand. The feminists have this thing, take our daughters to work day. Why don't the men have take our sons to the cat house night?
At the beginning of the Iraq War, I saw a red, white, and blue bumper sticker that said, "United We Stand." What is that supposed to mean? During the Revolutionary War, it referred to the American colonies. What does it mean now? That we should all think alike and there should be no dissenting opinions? As far as I'm concerned, united we're fucked.
O.J. Simpson has already received the ultimate punishment. For the rest of his life, he has to associate with golfers. I don't believe in road rage. I prefer the gentle rebuke. If I don't like the way someone is driving, I pull up alongside the other car and say, "I hope your children turn out poorly." Only one time have I lost my cool. That was the time I said to a woman, "I hope you get a blister on your cunt." But I said it with a smile. True fact. A headline said, "Peacekeeper killed in safe haven." Good. That'll show 'em. I think a lot of gay men stay in the closet because they're interested in fashion. I wonder if a person who comes out of a coma feels refreshed and well-rested. One day it dawned on me that Hitler had a mom and dad. The phrase, "Hitler's mom and dad," has an odd ring to it, doesn't it? It's kind of like when CNN used to talk about the city of Tikrit in Iraq being Saddam Hussein's hometown. The two ideas don't seem to go together. You know what's great about being in your 60s? Your children are in their 40s, so you don't have to worry about child molesters anymore. Unless, of course, one of your 40-year-old children is a child molester. I drove past a school with a sign that said, "We're drug-free and gun-free." Later that day, I drove past another school that didn't have a sign like that. What am I supposed to infer from this about the second school?
Reasons for giving up hope. Nothing works, nothing counts, nothing fits, no one cares, no one listens, standards have fallen, everyone's fatter, lines are longer, traffic's worse, kids are dumber, and the air is dirty. I'll be back with more reasons for giving up hope. In the meantime, try to come up with a few of your own.
Here's a thought. If you have a perfectly DNA-matched identical twin, technically, it's possible to go fuck yourself.
Sometimes you hear people say, "What kind of a message does that send to our children?" And I think, what messages are these people talking about? When I was a kid, I never got any messages. Maybe an aunt would send me a birthday card or something, or once in a while my mother would get a Western Union telegram. But at our house, that was about it.
Good news for senior citizens. Death is near.
During one of those patriotic orgies of self-congratulation that followed the First Gulf War, as General Schwarzkopf was bragging about dropping fire on women and babies, a protester interrupted his speech. The man who had killed a few hundred thousand civilians continued to speak. The protester was charged with disturbing the peace.
In New York State, there's a town called Eastchester. It's in a county called Westchester.
I think we need some new Christmas carols with a more modern approach. Of course, I wouldn't abandon the religious theme completely. How about, "Holy Christ, the Christmas tree's on fire," or, "Jesus, can you believe it's Christmas again?" This ought to get the ball rolling. I'm hoping you people will take it from here.
True fact. In 2002, in the U.S. Supreme Court, the surviving heirs of the famous film comedy trio were awarded the intellectual rights to the Three Stooges.
I don't know about you, but years ago, when Evel Knievel was jumping across the Snake River on his motorcycle, I was rooting for the river. In the news from Israel, I keep hearing about the cycle of violence. It reminded me that when I was a kid, I had one of them too. After school, I used to peddle it around the neighborhood, hitting other kids over the head with a big steel pipe.
They always say the vice president is just a heartbeat away from the presidency. Don't they mean the lack of a heartbeat? I always feel good when I visit a sick room supply store and see all the things I don't need. The last thing a young girl needs is a hands-on father.
I really feel good. I wish I felt even more like this.
Dear Mom, how are you? I am fine. I tried to donate my liver to science, but they wouldn't take it. Next time I'm going to add some sautéed onions and a light sauce. I'll let you know how it goes. Love, Neil.
An anonymous quote. There's nothing wrong with a man who enjoys a good blowjob.
I read an article that cautioned people against shaken baby syndrome. Do people really need to be told this sort of thing? And if some people do need to be told, are these the kind of people who are very likely to heed the advice? Personally, I never shake a baby, unless the recipe calls for it.
Imagine how creepy it would be to be sexually abused by your great-great-grandparents. Ugh.
Do you know why it is that when a rancher fucks a sheep, he does it at the edge of a cliff? It's so the sheep will push back.
True fact. A guy somewhere in the Midwest was sued for having too many Christmas lights on his house. Happy holidays.
I think Western Union should have a service where women with big tits come to your house and sing happy birthday. They could call it a mammogram.
Whenever I hear about someone who died for the flag, I always wonder about his real motives. And then I remember, oh yeah, they shoot deserters.
A lot of the people who worry about the safety of nuclear plants don't bother using their seat belts.
Here's some fun. Just keep calling telephone numbers at random and yelling, "Get off the line!"
This is National Disabled Month. Do your part. Cripple someone today. Two soldiers get into a fight. Two other soldiers pull them apart and tell them not to fight. Then they all pick up their guns and go kill people.
Which came first, the chicken or the egg?
The chicken.
What about the egg?
Oh, okay. The egg.
Using technology to clean up the mess made by technology doesn't seem too intelligent. At one time, if you made a telephone call from your table in a restaurant, it would have been a novelty and it would have attracted a lot of attention, more than the food. Now, if you're using a telephone at your table in a restaurant, it's considered a nuisance.
Why don't they just let these gay Boy Scouts join the Girl Scouts? What the fuck? You've got two groups. Use them both.
There's a whole different now. When you drive into California from Las Vegas, they have an agricultural inspection station where they ask you if you have any fruits or vegetables with you. And then they just believe whatever you tell them. What's the point of that? You know what I do? On every trip, I put a yam in the glove compartment just to be sure I'm breaking the law. We ought to have a name for the day before yesterday. Day for day? Yester for day. Why don't you people just come up with something and get back to me?
I don't own any stocks or bonds. All my money is tied up in debt.
A good motto to live by. Always try not to get killed.
If Marilyn Monroe were alive today, she'd be in her late 70s, and I'll bet there would still be guys lining up for a chance to fuck her.
Why not join the army? Join up and die. How do you expect to keep America free if you won't die? I'm dead. I died in Vietnam. I'm dead, and all my old army buddies are dead. Can you say that? No. What's wrong with you?
Perhaps you've noticed we no longer have old people in this country. They're all gone now, replaced by senior citizens. Somehow we wound up with millions of these unfortunate creatures known as golden agers or mature adults. These are cold, lifeless, antiseptic terms, typically American. all ways of sidestepping the fear of aging. And it's not difficult to understand the fear of aging. It's natural, and it's universal. No one wants to get old. No one wants to die. But we do. We die. And we don't like that. So we shade the truth. I started doing it when I reached my 40s. I'd look in the mirror at that time and think, well, I guess I'm getting older. That sounded a little better than old. Sounded like it might even last a bit longer. But people forget that older is comparative, and they use it as an absolute. She's an older woman. Oh, really? Older than what? Than she used to be? Well, yeah. So? People think getting old is bad because they think being old is bad. But you know something? Being old is just fine. In fact, it can be terrific. And anyway, it's one of those things you don't get to choose. It's not optional. But that insufferable group among us known as baby boomers, ages 42 through 59 as of 2005, are beginning to get old, and they're having trouble dealing with that. Remember, these baby boomers are the ones who gave us this soft, politically correct language in the first place. So rather than admit they're getting old, the baby boomers have come up with a new term to describe themselves as they approach the grave. They don't care for middle-aged, so instead, get this, folks, instead, they claim to be pre-elderly. Don't you love that? Pre-elderly. It's a real word. You don't hear it a lot, but it's out there. The boomers claim that if you're between 50 and 65, you're pre-elderly. But I'd be willing to bet that in 2011, when they begin turning 65, they will not be calling themselves elderly. I have a hunch they'll come up with some new way of avoiding reality. And I have a suggestion for them. They should call themselves the pre-dead. It's a perfect term because for them, it's accurate and it's highly descriptive. By the way, those ever-clever boomers have also come up with a word to describe the jobs they feel are most suitable for retired people who wish to keep working. They call these jobs elder-friendly. Isn't that sad? God, that's just really, really sad. And so, to sum it up, we have these senior citizens. And whether I like that phrase or not, unfortunately, I got used to it. And I no longer react too violently when I hear it. But there is still one description for old people that I'll never accept. That's when I hear someone describe an old guy as being, for instance, 80 years young. Even though I know it's tongue-in-cheek, it makes my skin crawl. It's overly cute and precious, and it's an evasion. It's junk language. On CBS's 60 Minutes, Leslie Stahl, God help her, actually referred to some old man as being a 90-something. Please, Leslie, I need a small personal break here. One last pathetic example in this category. On the radio, I heard Matt Drudge actually refer to people of age. And he wasn't being sarcastic. He said the West Nile virus is a particular threat to people of age. Poor Matt. Apparently, he's more fucked up than he seems. Now, going to an adjacent subject, one unfortunate fact of life for many of these 80 or 90-somethings is that they're forced to live in places where they'd rather not be. Old people's homes. So what name should we use for these places where we hide our old people? When I was a little boy, there was a building in my neighborhood called the Home for the Aged. It had a copper sign on the gate. Home for the Aged. It always looked deserted. I never saw anyone go in. Naturally, I never saw anyone come out either. Later, I noticed people started calling those places nursing homes and rest homes. Apparently, it was decided that some of these old people needed nurses, while others just needed a little rest. What you hear them called now is retirement homes or long-term care facilities. There's another one of those truly bloodless terms, long-term care facility. But actually, it makes sense to give it a name like that, because if you do, you make it a lot easier for the person you're putting in there to acquiesce and cooperate with you.
I remember old people used to tell their families, "Whatever you do, don't put me in a home. Please, don't put me in a home." But it's hard to imagine one of them saying, "Whatever you do, don't put me in a long-term care facility." So calling it that is really a trick. Come on, Grandpa, it's not a home. It's a long-term care facility. By the way, while we're on this subject of the language of getting old, I want to tell you something that happened to me in New York on a recent evening. I was standing in line at the Carnegie Deli to pay my check, and there was a guy ahead of me who looked like he was in his 60s. He gave the cashier a $10 bill, but apparently it wasn't enough. When the cashier mentioned it to him in a nice way, he said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I guess I had a senior moment." And I thought how sad that was. To blame a simple mistake on the fact that you're in your 60s, even if you're just sort of joking. As if anyone would think a 20-year-old couldn't make the same mistake. I only mention this because it's an example of how people can brainwash themselves by adopting popular language. I wanted to pull him aside and say, "Listen, I just heard you refer to yourself as a senior, and I wanted to ask, were you by any chance a junior last year? Because if you weren't a junior last year, then you're not a senior this year." I wanted to say it, but I figured, why would he listen to me? After all, I'm still a freshman.
Here's a safety tip from the American Eye Association. Never jab a knitting needle directly into your eye and repeatedly thrust it in and out. You could be inviting vision problems. If you should suffer an eye injury, rinse the eye immediately with a caustic solution of Clorox and ammonia, and rub the surface of the eye vigorously for about 10 minutes with number